Hi, this is Steve Cochran. It's Thanksgiving Eve and all through the house. Not a giblet was safe. That's not the poem. Wherever you are, I just want you to know I'm thankful for all of your support in the middle of this terrible year that we've had. The great start that we've also had for Live from My Office. I mean, obviously, it happens because of you listening and telling your friends. I hope you'll continue to do that, whether you listen on Apple or Spotify. Rate and review. Drop me an email at thecochranshow@gmail.com. Or go to my website and hear all of the episodes. That's cochranshow.com. I hope you're with people you love, who love you back, or at least good enough not to tell you the truth. Look, be smart, be safe, stay healthy. Distance, mask up, and happy Thanksgiving. We're replaying a couple of my favorite episodes of Live from My Office so far. And man, we got a lot of feedback on this. One of the funniest guys ever. And still writing hilarious books. And he's funny on the radio, and he's funny in podcasts, and he's just funny. It's my friend Dave Barry on Live from My Office. I'd like to personally thank presenting sponsor of Live from My Office, David Hochberg, and the folks at Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender. Look, he's passionate about helping listeners, and he's done it for years and years and years. And I trust him with my own family. My sister has done 2 refis with David. My daughter is about to do her refi on her first home with David. And also that ne'er-do-well, that drifter from town to town that, you know, John DeCoste from the Steve Cochran Show. He helped John and his family enhance his credit, refinance a previous home, secure the financing on his new home. Point being, if I'm kicking all of the people I care about to David Hochberg, well, then I think you can trust him. You can trust what I'm talking about. I've had great experiences. Is he loud? Of course he's loud, but he's loud because he cares. Here's how you get started. Go to 855-56-DAVID. That's the phone number. Pick up the phone and call him and talk to him. The website is 56david.com. You can refinance to pay off debt that you might have. You can ask about your student loan situation, reverse mortgages to help you or your parents with housing challenges, buying a new home. Again, the bottom line is this. I trust him. And I think you should, too. Just don't let him in your house for too long. Easy to contact. It's David Hochberg at 56david.com or call him up at 855-56-DAVID or 855-56-DAVID for Team Hochberg and the home help and the money help you need. Team Hochberg, presenting sponsors of Live from My Office. This is Live from My Office, and this is a very exciting day for me. That's right, Live from My Office. The man you heard giggling in the background is the funniest man in the universe. We've done some testing. It's come back positive. It turns out it's true. It's my friend Dave Barry. Mr. Barry, welcome, and thanks for doing this.
Hey, I'm live from my bedroom where I'm lying down on my bed.
Now, do you feel like I soft-sold you a little bit in the intro there? Funniest man in the universe? Should I pump that
funniest
up?
Man. You know, I used to be like my nightmare was because the New York Times in 1914 or something, one of my collections of columns came out, and a reviewer who didn't even work for the New York Times, a nice woman, I met her years later, wrote, "Dave Barry is the funniest man in America," in her review, which was very sweet, you know. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you know, the publisher puts it on my book.
Sure.
And then it becomes, the New York Times called him the funniest man in America, as if, like, the New York Times editorial board.
Right. They had a meeting.
And discussed this. Like, it is. Woody Allen? No. You know, ruled out all these people, and they picked me, you know. And it's like, but if you don't want to be, it's like being, you know, told, you know, I can look any man in the bar or something like this. Yeah. Guy can beat anybody up. Come on, anybody want to try him? So you really don't want to be called the funniest man in America because then immediately people are everything you say is supposed to be funny. And as I'm already demonstrating to you right here, not everything I say is funny. Well, nothing I've said so far.
You're 100% right, because the greatest compliment you can give somebody is they're the second greatest whatever, because then you've always got a fallback position. You're the, oh yeah, listen, I'm pretty good, but that guy. That's the guy.
Or just lowball them. I'm a big believer in lowballing. That's why I was raised to be a lowballer person. You know, just say, no, you're not that funny. And then be funny, and then people will be amused. But not because, like, I'm in this rock band of authors called the Rock Bottom Remainders that plays occasionally, like, once every 3 to 4 years.
And by the way, but no, you always tell me that. You're actually a very tight band.
But this is what I'm getting to, Steve, if you just don't step on this anecdote I'm trying to tell.
Thank God for editing.
You're going to make it in this business if you listen to me, Steve.
Okay, all right.
If you listen to
me. I'm trying.
On how to interview a guest.
All right, so good.
Anyway, so we're not like really terrible, the Rock Bottom Remainders. Some of the people in the band can actually play music. We're not good, and we're not like nowhere near really good, which is like there's lots of really good musicians. But we're not as terrible as, you know, some bands you've heard. But I always tell everybody ahead of time, oh, we're awful, we stink, we suck. And that way, when we play and we're not really horrible, people go, you're not that bad, which is like high praise for us.
So you're,
but if I came out there and said, we're really a good band, that would not work.
So your goal in life, your operating system, your motto is, I want to pleasantly surprise people. That's what you do.
Yeah, exactly. I would like, if the New York Times said, one of the more mildly amusing people, like, that would have been a great review for
sure,
me. And then people would go, oh, he's, you know, yeah, he's at least mildly amusing.
All right, so
let's
catch up. Let's catch up on a couple of things. When last we talked, you had written your 4,000th book. We got a couple of books to talk about here, and one I think you can pre-order, and we'll get to all that. How many books have you written now? Do you even know?
Steve? No, I don't. It's like there's probably if the list of books that I have I had a role in partly at least in writing, it's probably around 50 books. However, some of those are collections of columns. So I didn't really write them as books. Some of them are actual books that I wrote beginning to end, brand new books. Some of them I collaborated with other authors on. Which I've done a lot of times. So there's like, you know, a lot of different. But if I wanted to give you a simple answer to your question, I would say roughly 50 books, Steve.
That's amazing. It really is amazing. You've done some children's books now. And here's where I'm going to get to that. This is why I'm a professional interviewer, called one of the greats, not number one, maybe two, maybe three. you have written some children's books. Now, before I get to the children's book piece, because this is something I want to do and I haven't done. We were talking about being grandparents before we got on the air, but let's back that up.
Yeah.
Let's back that up even further. You're in Miami. How's your family? Are you guys all healthy?
We're all healthy as far as I know. We're being tested on an hourly basis because of this. We're kind of huddled in, you know, hunkered down. I have sort of my extended family here. My son and daughter-in-law are here from New York. They fled New York to come to Florida. That was a foolish mistake.
Seemed like a good idea
back
at the time.
It seemed like a great idea. Yeah. Back when they were closing the borders, they got in just in time. But anyway, they've been here for several months, and I have two grandchildren, as I understand you do.
Yes, that's right.
And I want to just say, here's the biggest problem with grandchildren. And back me up on this. It's the floor. They want to play with you on the floor. And when you are my age, I am now 73 years old. And when you are 73 years old, the floor is like North Korea. You do not just go there on the spur of the moment. And you have to ask yourself, how am I going to get there? How am I going to get back from there? What if while I'm there, I have to go to the bathroom? These are questions. And that's thing one about grandparenthood is the floor.
I'm telling you, 100% agree. And literally 2 minutes before I called you to record this, my incredibly sweet world's greatest granddaughter, she's 4 and a half, pops, sit next to me on the floor so we can play.
Yeah, that's where they want to play.
And I said, I'm going to stand up here so I can look because I can see better from here at all this stuff you're doing. Okay. I just don't know how long those lies are going to work.
And the other thing, okay, how about this? I would like to, like, I know if we go back in time, if we can ever develop that time travel capability, mm-hmm. we're going to kill Hitler. Okay, that's a given. We're going to go back in time and we're going to kill Hitler.
Got it. Check.
Second person we're going to kill is whoever invented Legos.
Yes.
That's the other thing about being a grandparent. They want to play with Legos. And we already know, first of all, that, you know, they get on the floor and you step on them and they hurt and everything. But also, have you ever, like, tried to play with your grandchild with Legos? Mm-hmm. You can put those things together for 3 hours on end. And you still have nothing.
Right.
You have a wad of plastic, like a Rubik's Cube, mutant Rubik's Cube from Mars. You really can't, you can't ever finish or get anywhere with Legos. Like, when I was a kid, we had, like, Tinker Toys. You could make something with a Tinker Toy.
Yeah. But do you do what I do? Do you rationalize? Like, after 2 hours with the Legos, I go, sure, it's a little square piece of plastic crap, but to me, it's the Arc de Triomphe.
Yeah, we do sort of say, okay, we're done. That's done. That looks like a castle to me. Yeah. But anyway, that's getting back to your question, Steven. I know you're professional.
And you're okay. You guys are all okay.
We're okay. We're here in Miami. We're okay. We're getting by. How about you?
You know, Illinois has been, Chicago's been struggling, but done fairly well. And Illinois in general has been able to do fairly well. But I feel like we're surrounded. Remember the Bugs Bunny classics where Bugs would be surrounded by trouble, whether it was Daffy and Yosemite Sam? We're surrounded by Iowa and Indiana and Michigan and Wisconsin, and they're all staring at us, going to shoot us with their Yosemite Sam muskets filled with COVID-19. So we're holding on, but it doesn't look good.
You mean Illinois is actually doing better than all of those states?
It kind of is, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Good for you, Illinois.
And we're all healthy. The people that, of course, I have trouble tolerating are the no-mask people. How's the mask wearing going there?
Yeah. Well, you know, around where I live, people wear masks when they should, when you go into a store.
Yep.
I mean, like in my neighborhood, we don't wear masks because we're knocking and never anybody around, basically. When we're walking the dog, but when we go to a store, yes, we put on masks. And I haven't seen any of these idiots who, like, view it as a civil rights issue to not wear a mask. But I keep seeing videos, and they all seem to be in Florida, naturally. But I personally haven't run into any of them so far.
My favorite argument is, show me in the Constitution where it says I should wear a mask. And I thought to myself, you know, the Founding Fathers had a lot going on, and I don't think they covered this necessarily. It is
of all the hills to die on, and I mean, you're going to die on it. That seems to be one of the stupider ones. But then we live in stupid times, don't we?
And this year has been just bananas. You know, everybody can go, well, I'm old enough to remember 1968. Yeah, that was a terrible year. I'm old enough to remember 9/11. Yeah, that was terrible. You know, 2008 was terrible. You know, Katrina, all of those things. But this year, I don't follow the Chinese calendar. Is there a year of shit on the Chinese calendar? Because we may be there.
Oh, I forgot. It's a podcast and we can say shit.
Oh, yeah, you can.
I remember all those years. The closest to this one would be, in my view, 68, when actually there was a flu that swept around the world. We were so busy with other stuff, we didn't even notice it. That killed a lot of people. But, this has been the most insane year. Every year at the end of the year, I write this year in review.
Yeah, which is brilliant, by the way. I know you hate when I compliment you, but it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, this is going to be a hard one to do because, like, first of all, do we even want to talk about this year anymore when it's over? Are we just going to, like, I think we should just leave it out of the history books. This was just such a weird, strange year. And we're not even, barely halfway through it.
Right.
And we have an election ahead of us. So, this is the most depressing podcast ever.
Well, and that's really our goal when we sit down and do Live from the Office. You know, a bunch of comedian friends and I got together because stand-up comedians aren't working, and normally they don't have that kind of time. Who am I kidding? Of course they do. But we were talking about how it's hard to be funny, which you were just talking about, in this environment. And over the course of an hour, we found two or three things that at least amused us. Here's one for you and see if you've encountered this. Everybody's going out for walks now because they're desperately afraid they're going to have to spend more time with their family or they just have to get out of their house. When you go out for a walk, as people are approaching you from the other direction, do you find what I find? They will jump into traffic to avoid you. It's not it's not great for your self-esteem. You know, you think, oh, it's the COVID. Maybe it's not.
Maybe they just don't like you. Yeah, we do that here. We kind of weave around, you know, and I have a dog with me. So, and the problem I have sometimes is I'm trying to avoid the people, but my dog would like to go over and hump them on the leg. And
well, are you sure that's not reversed?
And I'm not sure. Like, are they worried that, you know, my dog, because my dog is not wearing a mask. And are they worried that you know, the dog's going to give them COVID? Yeah, it's very awkward. Life in general is awkward. Being in the grocery store is awkward because you're having all these interactions with people from 6 feet away and you can't tell if they're smiling or not. I think we should have some kind of little sign we could hold. You know, it says what our mood is.
Right,
you know.
Right. Yeah, some sort of mood medallion you could wear around your neck.
Something.
Yeah.
Something that would say, you know, yeah, that person actually is in a bad mood, so even though you can't see it.
Well, you realize we live in a time now where you could walk by a bank and there could be a sign that says "must wear mask to enter." I mean, how upside down is that?
Yeah. And if you were trying to rob a bank, I don't think anybody would take you seriously at the moment.
Right. They go, no, I'm sorry. You're going to have to wait in line. And
like everybody else. Yeah. All right. Let me pour some sanitizer on that weapon.
I spent a lot of time talking about the one they call Trump. So we don't need to beat this in the ground. We both know what the world knows is the guy is a human dumpster fire. And when people go, you have to have respect for the office. Oh, I respect the office. I just don't respect the resident. Yeah. And so this election's coming up. Now, in Florida, you got a governor who I'm not entirely sure about. How much does he affect your life day to day? Do you feel like you've got a junior Trump running you?
He kind of is. I mean, I don't think he's not like, to me, Trump seems insane. And DeSantis, not so much that. Just like, he likes Trump. He's pro Trump, but he's not. I don't know. Governors to me never matter that much. I don't listen to half the time. I don't know who the governor for sure is. I don't think it's. Yeah.
And you've had a run there. We were talking off the air, and I think we agree on this. The biggest mistake the Democrats could make is get elected and then treat this like payback's a bitch and then go too far in the other direction. The president of the United States has to be president for everybody, and this guy didn't get it. And the next guy, if it's Biden, has to. Otherwise, we're not getting anywhere, and it's getting worse.
Steve, you sound very serious right now, but I agree with you.
all right, well, let's get off it then.
I do hope that that Biden wins, and I do hope that when he does win, that what you say, that he listens to the voice of Steve, because it's we just can't go on with everybody hating everybody, no. Which is kind of where we are now, and I'm sick of it, and most people are sick of it. On the streams of both sides, people just busy hating all day. They wake up hating, they go to sleep hating, and that's their life. But most of us in the middle are just not really, we don't want to even know that much what's going on in Washington most of the time. We would rather not. We would rather have our lives just, you know, proceed calmly. And we don't want, you're right. I just hope that they don't swing the pendulum way far the other way and try to get even.
All right, so what have you done during this lockdown? You work a lot, you write a lot, but what are you doing other than that?
No, I'm not. That's the thing. You know, you would think you would have all this spare time, but I spend so much time worrying and arguing, not arguing, but, you know, reading about COVID and reading about racism and reading about I feel like distracted all the time, whereas you'd think that if you're a writer – and at home, which is my normal state of affairs anyway, you'd have more time now, but it doesn't feel that way. And then there's grandchildren who keep coming in the room and wanting to play on the floor.
For comedians listening, nice callback. Very well done by you. Let's talk about these kids' books for a second. You got 3 or 4 kids' books out, right?
Well, Steve, not to be... how do I put this? No, not really. I did write a bunch of children's books with Ridley Pearson, but that was maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So
well, that's real time. That's real time in the book world. Wait, you're setting aside Harry Potter because it was years ago? Come on. Of course it's real time.
No, I do have – I wrote this series of Peter Pan prequels with Ridley Pearson, my good friend Ridley Pearson. That was a while ago. And they became a Broadway play, and that was a while ago. All these things happened a while ago, Steve.
And that Broadway play, by the way, was Hamilton, and I salute you on what you did there. No one saw that coming.
No, that was good. Yeah. Did you ever think there was going to be a time in America when a whole lot of old white people would be listening to rap music? I didn't.
Yeah, you know, the
fascinating thing to me about that was the pitch meeting. That's the old joke about Hogan's Heroes. Okay, it's a sitcom about a German prisoner of war camp, and then somebody bought it. Who buys this play?
And there's this wacky German guard.
Yes, right. So you go and you pitch Hamilton, and you go, okay, it's the guy on a 10, I think, or is it the 20, or maybe the 5, but it's that guy. And
he's one of those guys.
And it's a musical, and most of it's rap. Oh, yeah, let me line up and write you a check.
Is it rap? And both he and his son are killed in duels. It's kind of the
right. It's the feel good hit of the fall.
Hey, maybe we should bring back duels. I'm just thinking Hamilton is hot.
Yeah.
There could be like, well, how about this? We set up some kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Pay per view
franchise where there's duels. Duels, and you have duels in you don't like somebody you're in Costco and somebody's not wearing a mask, and you know you get into it with that person, and you challenge each other to a duel, and then you go to our franchise. I don't know what you would call it.
I think you call it duels. Duels is a great name.
Duels, and you go to duels, and you choose your weapons. I don't think fatal would be an option. Like not real guns, but something.
Something would teach you a lesson, you know. Something that would leave a, like my father would say, would leave a welt. I don't really understand what
a
welt
was. Something below the level of hatchet.
Right. You know, right.
On the or rocks. They could just throw rocks at each other, and you have a duel. Do you think that would be good?
I think it's a great idea. Now, what would the menu look like? Because we're going to need food and beverages.
Gotta have food. Well, pizza, of course, and chicken fingers, because the kids would be there.
Well, that's a brilliant idea.
Good. This is because like Chuck E. Cheese's is closing down. They're filing for bankruptcy, and people need a place to fight. Families to fight.
Chuck E. Cheese was a COVID breeding ground 50 years before anybody ever knew what COVID was. The ball
it will
pit.
Not shock me if when the history of this pandemic is finally written and they nail it all down, the biology and the DNA, if it does not turn out that this all began and it took somewhere and got to China from there somehow.
Yeah, bats have been disparaged over this. It was the ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese, let's be honest.
You know, I'm pretty sure that the manual, Chuck E. Cheese's management manual, required them to wipe down each ball with alcohol every night.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, every 6 months, whether it needs it or not. And I was only in a Chuck E. Cheese a couple times.
You could get pregnant. A woman could get pregnant jumping into a Chuck E. Cheese. A man probably could get pregnant jumping into a Chuck E. Cheese's ball pit.
I was only there a couple of times, but the animatronics there may have been the most frightening characters ever.
I know. Not only that, but what percentage of the Chuck E. Cheese's you've visited, what would you estimate is the percentage of video games that actually worked?
Right.
It was somewhere around 6 to 7%
right.
maximum.
Right.
So there were
like
fights over who got to use the working. Anyway, yeah.
So in other words, we'll miss it.
We'll miss it, but we can buy all their equipment and put it in duels.
Which is what we're going to need.
We're going to need non-working games for the people to try to play while they were waiting for the next duel to begin. But the real entertainment would be the dads dueling. I mean, moms too, really.
It's a brilliant idea for a franchise, and I'm not just saying that because you're the guest on the phone.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Well, you're a 50-50 partner, Steve. I mean, we came up with this together, and...
Yeah, but I feel like I had the name, so it's 49-51, and I'll obviously give you the winning vote.
I'll take it.
All right, so what's the newest book?
Okay, the most recent book I wrote, which is actually out there on the market, is called Lessons from Lucy. and it's about my dog, whose name is Lucy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the dog that humps people while you walk that you mentioned earlier.
She does attempt to do that sometimes, not so much anymore because she's old. She's 12 now. But yeah, it's about basically the premise of the book was that I turned 70 and Lucy turned 10, which is 70 in dog years. Mm-hmm. At least that's what mm-hmm. I was always taught.
Sure, of course.
And I figured out Lucy was really doing a much better job of getting old than I was. And so the idea of the book was to figure out what is it the dogs do that makes them happier? And can we do those things except for drinking from the toilet? Although I would, if that worked.
And what is the primary lesson you learned from Lucy?
Oh, there's a bunch of them, Steve. You know, people will have to actually buy the book. But, you know, it's all basic stuff. One of the lessons comes from Illinois, your state, which is, I mean, one of the lessons is that dogs continue doing stupid things that they enjoy, whereas most people, when they get older, they start thinking, I'm not going to do that. Something you used to do that you really liked to do that was really fun.
Sure.
For example, dance, just simple thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
They used to do and think, you didn't care and you did it. And then you get old and I can't dance anymore. I'm old. I don't have, you know, stuff. And dogs never stop doing whatever they enjoy. They keep doing it.
It's a great point. And I think you may have covered this in the book, but you've got me thinking now because we're talking about this COVID thing and how nobody can shake hands anymore. The dog greeting could be the way we as humans go forward and survive. It's going to take a little getting used to, but if I haven't seen you in a while, I sniff your behind.
Stick your nose right in my crotch.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you've always done that, Steve. And it's one of the reasons I'm doing this by phone. But anyway, the Illinois, I should explain the Illinois reference before I forget it. But one of the things that I used to do that I really had fun doing was in Arcola, Illinois, which is near a little bit south of Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
Arcola, Illinois, which is, I'm sure you know, the broom corn capital of the world.
Absolutely. Everyone
knows that. They used to grow. They don't anymore, but they used to grow the broom whose bristles were used to make brooms. And so it's a broom corn cap. But anyway, they have this festival every year they call the Broom Corn Festival, which is basically an excuse to get people to come there and drink beer and walk around. And there's an organization down there called the Lawn Rangers, which is a precision lawnmower and broom drill team where they march around with lawnmowers and do precision maneuvers. And they hold brooms because it's the broom corn capital. And they wear masks because they're the Lawn Rangers and also to preserve their secret identities. Anyway, and they do this pretty drunk, pretty hammered every year. And they're the highlight of the parade. Like a couple decades ago, a guy named Pat Monahan, who was one of the founders, invited me there to join it. This is back when I was writing a weekly column.
Uh-huh.
So I would do anything for a column. So I went and did it, and it was really fun. And I did it for a few years. I really enjoyed it. And then I stopped doing it because I was getting old.
And, right, because you wouldn't do anything fun anymore.
Exactly. And so when I was writing this book, I said, damn it, I'm going to go down and do that again. And I did. And it was really amazing and it was fun. So that's one of the lessons anyway in the book. Is like, so basically I try to employ the techniques my dog employs to make my life better and happier. And just as one last statement that I know will impress you, the Lawn Rangers in 2012, what year? Yeah, 2012 marched in Barack Obama's inaugural parade.
Oh, that's fantastic.
This is really true. Pushed our lawnmowers up Pennsylvania Avenue past the reviewing stand for Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, and Joe Biden, watched us go by and thought, who the hell are these people?
Now, do you get into any brawls after that display?
No, we did. They didn't let us near. but it was pretty much a highlight of the parade, if you ask me.
Now, you've got two friends who are very funny, Alan and Adam. And and they have they have a particular faith that you and I don't know as well as we should. And you've learned from them in a field guide to the Jewish people. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, as you say, Alan Zweibelz was one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live.
And hilarious guy.
He's a really funny guy. And it's Gary Shandling's show. He mm-hmm. was one of the co-creators of that with Gary Shandling. And Adam Mansbach, who wrote, wait now, this is a podcast. Am I allowed to say the F-bomb word?
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. He wrote Go the Fuck to Sleep, which sold more books than pretty much
anything
ever written.
Oh, that was tremendous.
Yes. Yeah. So those two guys, they're funny and they're Jewish. I guess that may be redundant. And I have written two books about Judaism. You may ask why I was allowed to be a participant in this. And the answer is that my wife is Jewish and my daughter's Jewish. And I am circumcised. That was a requirement.
You're probably sharing one more than you needed. I'll get back to you on which one it was.
Anyway, and I know these guys. So we wrote a Haggadah called "For This We Left Egypt," and then we wrote a Field Guide to the Jewish People, in which we explain everything you need to know about Judaism. For example, did you know? You know, you've been to Jewish weddings, have you not?
Sure, of course.
Well, you don't have to say yes if you really haven't.
No, I have. Listen,
you've been to Jewish weddings and bar or bat mitzvahs.
Hava Negila.
And you know they dance the Hora.
Uh-huh.
And during the Hora, have you noticed that they pick people up on chairs and
yes.
carry them around?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know why they do that?
No. I was always awkward
okay,
about
because
asking.
Because there was a time when Jewish people were, because of prejudice, barred from amusement parks, and they couldn't ride roller coasters. So they had to simulate that by carrying each other around on furniture.
That is a brilliant fact. Now, my concern is...
This is one of the many facts that's in this book that you will not find in other books that are so-called books.
Does this, A Field Guide to the Jewish People, which you can pre-order at daveberry.com or else you can pick it up. I don't know, is it out yet?
Yeah, it's been out for quite some time.
You got to let me tell you something, friend. You got to update the website or fire the people that are doing it because there's something on here about Spiro Agnew's current views that you probably should adjust as well. So, Field Guide to the Jewish People, get your copy. Does this in any way negate my book, Token Shiksa? Is that a problem? I mean, can I still write that?
Yeah, no, go for it. But wait, what is that about? I'm just curious. I mean, I know what a shiksa is, mm-hmm. and I know what a token mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. Why are you, Steve Cochran, writing a book called The Token Shiksa?
We're stuck on the title right now. We don't have anything beyond that, but we're working on it.
Oh, it's kind of like Duels, the restaurant chain.
Right.
It's still in the conceptual phase.
This is the podcast. There are no bad ideas. All right, so give me a typical day like today. After you finish talking to me, what's the rest of the day for Dave Barry?
All right, well, I started the day by walking the dog,
mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much the highlight, except for this.
so there's nothing to look forward to now?
No, and then I go and I turn on my laptop and read my emails, and then I attempt to write for hours. And it's been very slow. And it's like what, you know, if you were to ask most writers what they do, they would tell you pretty much what I just told you. They sit around and look at the screen and wait for something to happen. And unless they're Stephen King, it doesn't happen very often. Stephen, as far as I can tell, writes a book, well, you know, before he wakes up in the morning, I think, while he's still asleep.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Now, I hate this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So do you have a process where you force yourself to do it at a particular time each day?
Yeah, I do. I write in the morning after I walk the dog when I have coffee and I'm still feeling reasonably alert. and then I drift off into random internet sites. Mm-hmm. And then I try again a little bit in the afternoon. And then I give up in despair and start drinking.
Yeah, well, day drinking is certainly the answer to most things.
Do you think I think there's a lot of that going on these days. I really do.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, in Savannah, Georgia.
And that's, I really don't drink. I'm strictly sticking to heroin. Heroin, and that's it.
Yeah, no, I don't drink either.
I don't shoot it up before 1 o'clock in the afternoon either.
Yeah, I'm more of a meth man. So,
So, do you really not drink at all?
I don't drink
at
all.
Is that true?
No. I mean, I'll toast to champagne at midnight, you know, on a Monday. No, you know, New Year's Eve, I might have a sip of champagne, but no. I come from a family of professional drinkers. I mean, Olympic-level drinkers. So because of that, I kind of shied away. Someone had to drive. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so good for you.
Yeah, I don't know that it's good for me, but it is what it is.
No, I'm proud of you, Steve.
Well, at least I found something. And I'm looking at the cover of Lessons from Lucy. That is a good-looking dog.
Yes, she's very beautiful. Her face went completely white at some point, but she doesn't care. Well, that's actually one of the lessons, which is you shouldn't care much how you look, because dogs definitely don't, which is the wonderful thing about one of the many wonderful things about dogs. They do not give a shit what they look like. It doesn't ever occur to them to even think about it.
Well, you know what?
It saves them so much time and trouble.
I was going to let you get on with your day of not doing much, but you brought up one more point that I think is very important since we were talking about Lucy and dogs. When did this tradition, this behavior of following your dog around, waiting for the dog to take a crap, and turning a bag inside out and picking it up, when did that start?
I do that.
Well, of course you do.
I have to do that. I do it every day, twice a day, in fact.
Yeah, of course you do. And, but when did it start?
I have noticed that when I walk the dog with my wife, which I often do, it is never my wife who does that. It is always I who do that. I do that. But anyway, I don't know. I get why we do it, because when we don't do it in our neighborhood anyway, you know, you end up with, because a lot of people have dogs, you end up with dog shit everywhere, which is not a good thing.
But when we were kids,
nobody did it. We used to do this.
No.
We used to just let the dogs shit, didn't we?
Yeah, it was shit socialism. Like, your dog would shit in my yard, my dog would shit in your yard. Somehow it all equaled out at the end of the day.
Well, there are like whole big disputes that go on. In my neighborhood, we have this, there's a neighborhood website, of course. And, you know, people, I mean, one of the ways you can get a raging dispute going on there with hundreds of comments is to say anything at all about dog shit, one way or the other, you know, and the people who really don't like it when dogs poop in their yard, get into it with the people who say, wow, why do you care? It's very natural and everything else. So it's an issue Americans care about. And I don't know where Joe Biden stands on it, but he's going to have to take a stand at some point.
It could tip the election.
In my neighborhood, for sure.
I miss having a dog. I haven't had a dog in a long time, basically because of this issue. But I have decided this.
Really? That's because you don't like picking up the poop? That's it? That's the whole reason?
It seems to be. But my decision came down to this. When the dog can do that for me, then I'm in. And until the dog can do that for me, I'd, you know. And honestly, if the dog's going to follow me around, then we have a bigger problem.
Exactly. Well, the other side of that is, you know, we have to deal with the visual of you walking around and pooping outdoors, which I just don't think is worth it.
You know, this had so much
promise.
Even if
the dog is picking up after you. Yeah.
When we started, I thought we were really on a nice roll. The last 10 minutes
of this. As long as you're wearing a mask, Steve, you can shit wherever you want. That's why you wear the mask.
You're the best, man. I miss you and I love you. And I just always laugh. I always laugh at whatever you're doing, including the,
well, let's get together and have intimate relations again one of these years, Steve.
Yeah. Well,
I
was going to say the cameras I've put up in your house, I don't want them to distract you, but I like watching you and I laugh then too. But my best to Lucy and the family, and I'm glad the grandkids are with you, and if God's willing, you and I won't have to get on the floor anytime soon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, go get on the floor with your granddaughter. But now you took that away. Okay. And same to you, man. You take care. Be healthy. Be safe. Don't get any of those states around you where the the virus is lurking.
You're the best.
Stay safe in Illinois. Illinois, the safe state.
That's usually what we call it. Yeah, ever since Capone died.
Yeah.
That's Dave Barry. Nobody's funnier. Nobody. And if you've never read Dave Barry, and I realize that's a possibility, I hope you will. Because Dave Barry is out and available in, you know, like you said, about 50 books, and you should go grab one or two. Dave Barry on Live from My Office. Live from My Office, sponsored by David Hochberg and Team Hochberg. What is Team Hochberg? Well, powered by Homeside Financial. Been doing loans since 2000, licensed to provide mortgage lending services across this great country of ours. Team Ockberg really makes the process simple. All you have to do is grab a couple of pieces of your own paperwork, stuff that you should have in a particular place anyway. And don't make him call you 11 or 12 times to get that. Just do your part. They'll roll with it, and they're going to be able to save you a whole bunch of money. They have dedicated in-house support staff that, of course, includes underwriters and closing folks. And you're not going to get some closing scam when you work with David Ockberg and Team Ockberg. It's not some teaser thing that comes in. If he says he's going to help you with closing costs, he's going to help you with closing costs. He's going to get you the lowest possible number. And you're going to feel better about it because you're going to get a great rate and you're going to deal with somebody who's going to be just as thrilled as you are that you got that great rate, because that's why he goes to work. He goes to work because he's got plenty. Let me tell you something. He's got plenty of money. He goes to work so he can now be the guy to help you get over the hump. There's a million scenarios of things that have happened and he knows all of them. So here's the deal. Don't be embarrassed. There's nothing you can tell him that he hasn't heard already. It's David Ockberg and Team Ockberg, 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com.
30 years plus on the airwaves, you have turned your dial to me. Now you're tuned into my podcast. It's live from my office, Steve. From Ithaca, New York, to Carolina South, W. Cochran Steve. From Minneapolis and then Chicago twice, top-rated shows achieved. Sit back, relax, and now listen to my show. When or wherever you are, 'cause you're on the go. A-list celebs with some laughs and great info. Live from my office, the Steve Cochran Podcast Show. No better place to be. Subscribe and like for free. Live from my office, Steve. So glad you're with me. It's Live from My Office, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Live from My Office, a service of Monkey Run Productions. All rights reserved. The podcast is hosted by Steve Cochran, and it's mixed, edited, and produced by me, Ross Cochran. Support the show by subscribing wherever you're listening and by telling your friends about it. Follow Steve on all social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And make sure you check out this episode's show notes for relevant information discussed during the conversations. You can also email the show directly at thecochranshow@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And that's the best place to tell us about your favorite nonprofit so we can make sure we mention them on the next episode. Steve is available for corporate speaking gigs. He would love to MC your event. And occasionally, he's funny. Thank you for listening. Head to CochranShow.com for more.